Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here today with my friend Bruce McCurdy. Welcome, Bruce.
Hey, David.
So we're here to celebrate the best of all kinds of victories in a number of ways. A come-from-behind victory, so rare to see for the Edmonton Oilers, excuse me, and also a victory that claws them back to real 500, 14 wins and 14 losses. And real 500 in the Pacific Division this year is going to be the demarcation point for the teams that are seriously in the playoff chase and those that aren't. And the Oilers are back in it, Bruce. And it's weird. Every game right now feels like game seven of the Stanley Cup Finals to me. Like, I they're so tense, and they seem like the Oilers are, they just need to win them. It feels like the season's hanging in the balance. And quite honestly, as a fan, I'm kind of desperate for them to actually claw their way back into the race and not have another one of these horrible seasons this year. I can't stand the thought of it again, them being up by January, December. We're already in December, but so I'm just desperate for that not to happen as a fan, and to watch a team that can get its crap together and play some decent hockey. So that's where I'm at.
Hashtag never in doubt. Tonight's game. They only trailed for a mere 53 minutes out of the 60. Man, and the Oilers that I've been harping on for having the worst 6-on-5 team going, they actually connected 6-on-5. The power play couldn't connect in 5 chances, but they got a 6-on-5 and they made it click for a huge, super huge goal. It's like that save that Koskinen made the other night, right? It's worth 2 points, not just one, because it got him into overtime. And then once they won the overtime, well, that's your bonus. But without that goal, they're coming home with 0 points for the road trip. And this is a lot surlier podcast than I think it's going to be.
Yes, indeed. It would have been plenty surly. Winner's Twitter was so... it was the surly sphere. People were so angry after that first period, just spitting, man. It was one of the worst periods of the year, followed by two of the best. It was funny because when they got up, when they pulled the goalie, I was recalling what you had talked about with the Oilers being so crappy and how the Oilers always seem to give a goal when it's 6-on-5 and they always have one scored against them. Here we go. We scored one. It was amazing. And that was a nice low shot by Klefbom, hit the net, which is really important. Chiasson also set a hell of a screen, I thought. Mm-hmm. So fantastic. Bruce, this is the two good things, two bad things, and two numbers podcast. Right. What is your good thing?
Well, tonight I got to go with Cam Talbot. Goodness knows the man's been taking a lot of grief in these parts and other parts around the Orlogosphere. Hasn't won a game for better part of 6 weeks. I think October 26th they kept talking about tonight. And here we are, December 5th. So 40 days and 40 nights later, he was stuck on 99 wins as an Oiler that whole time. And, you know, in my pregame game day report today, I talked about Oilers' pop gun offense. And at the bottom of it, I mentioned how Cam Talbot's been giving in 3-plus goals every game. When your team only scores 2, that's a very bad recipe for success. Well, tonight they only scored 2 again, but he never let in that third goal, and it was 2-0 early. I'm not sure he had much of a prayer on the goals, but you know what? From 13:32 of the first period to the end, he was he came up some big stops. They weren't all pretty, but he was. You know, he slammed the door and he kept his team in the game. And if they lose 2-1, you're going grr again. But they finally did pull it out for him. And then they got the job done in the shootout. So not the prettiest of wins, but for Cam Talbot, just a huge, massive turning point. And he played well. You know, one of the key plays that he made was right when they first pulled the goalie, he was on his way to the bench. And he read the play up ice and he hustled his ass back into the net and he stopped. I think it was a 2-on-1 opportunity that they had. And, you know, if he doesn't make that decision, it's 3-1 right then and there. And that game is over with an early empty net goal like they seem to give up so often. And so even, you know, a small thing like that, a whole game can hinge on on a decision like that, and perhaps this one did. Anyway, he did the job, and then in shootout, he got just two tiniest pieces out of the shots by Tarasenko and Shen. Both of them hit Talbot and then missed the post by maybe an inch or two. It was like he just got enough for both of them. And his guys clicked at the other end, and what do you know, win number 100 for Cam. It was nice to see Lucic chasing down the puck for him right after the game. You know the teammates are thinking of him when you see stuff like that.
Yeah, this was one of those games that we've talked about that either team easily could have won, obviously. Mm-hmm. It comes down to a shootout, but it's just the smallest of margins. Mm-hmm. And some puck luck and a good read by Cam Talbot there. You know, it's funny because there was talk, of course, last week. Of course, trade talk starts bubbling up, and he's put on a list on TSN of most likely goalies to be traded, and there's all this. It just, that was never realistic. I mean,
goalies don't get traded. We talked about this. It's just yeah. You know, clickbait, but it's just.
It was
so uncommonly during the season for any kind of legitimate, you know, goalie with a price tag, somebody who's not a backup or a number three somewhere.
Yeah, and Hitchcock's prop, it was interesting. Every time he was asked about the goalie situation, mm-hmm. that I've heard in the last few weeks, he's always said this. He's been asked about Mikko Koskinen's great play.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, a number of times, and every single time that's happened, he's brought up, yeah, we have two goalies mm-hmm. who are really important to the team and who are really good players. We're so lucky. And he mm-hmm. stressed the fact they're going to need both goalies and they're going to use both goalies. So I think you have to give Hitchcock some credit here. Absolutely. For keeping Talbot's confidence high, mm-hmm. knowing that he's going to get in some games, going to get his chance, and he came through for the coach. And this kind of puts to the lie also this – I remember last year we heard, there was something about McClelland had pulled Cam Talbot too early and it had ruined his confidence, and you have to be so careful. Like this idea that a goalie can't go through some adversity, like he can't sit for 3 weeks or he can't get pulled from a game and come back and play well. I didn't buy it last year. It just seemed like this weird narrative for the Oilers going sideways that Talbot had been pulled early and it wrecked his confidence. I just thought that was always ridiculous. I mean, no, maybe there's something else going on in a larger sense between the coach and the goalie. I can't say, but no, goalies can get pulled and they can sit for 2 or 3 weeks and stew and worry about their future and their next contract and get their crap together and come back and play a good game. And that's what Cam Talbot did. So good for him. My good thing, Bruce, is the play of the second line. And the Oilers, they didn't get a lot of scoring. But, you know, the big issue, and you wrote about it today, lack of secondary scoring. But we got a goal from the second line at a really important time. And it was that second line, as the game went on, may have actually been the Oilers' best line. Jujhar Khaira was playing really well. Jesse Puljujärvi, He can be a frustrating player to watch. He falls down a lot. But he was getting in there fast and getting his stick on the puck a lot and kind of slashing away pucks, doing his little bit to help out there, going hard. He goes hard to the front of the net and stakes his position there. I guess someone's told him that's the key to staying in the NHL because he's doing it almost every single play in the offensive end. He's camping out in front of the offensive net.
Good.
And, of course, Nugent Hopkins was splendid. And he also camped out in front of the net and put in a nice goal there. And that line was strong. And it may actually have been strong enough, Bruce. Like, I think they should break up McDavid and Draisaitl. I mean, look at how many goals the Oilers have scored since they've put those two together. It doesn't work. Like, stacking the lines doesn't work for the team. That line, they don't score enough to justify it. They should split them up. But RNH's line played well enough that maybe they won't. Maybe they'll just stick with it a couple more games.
I thought RNH himself was terrific, especially in the second period. Man, he was all over the puck. And the odd thing here is that the line was Nugent Hopkins, Khaira, and Puljujärvi, right? Well, RNH played more than both of his wingers combined. So they were using him so much on special teams and giving him extra shifts here and there. The ice time splits are really bizarre in this game. There was a lot of weird numbers from this game, which we'll talk about a couple of them later. But RNH played 26 minutes and 38 seconds, ridiculously high number for a forward, which was third on the team tonight because they were really riding the big hosses tonight.
Bruce, what is your bad thing tonight?
My bad thing is only tangentially related to the game, but Sportsnet. Come on, guys. There's an icing with 1:39 to play, I think it is. The Oilers pull Talbot. He's on the bench for a face-off in the zone, offensive zone, game on the line. And Sportsnet decides this is a good time to show a Cam Talbot highlight package. And it was a fine highlight package, and it showed a bunch of saves by Talbot. Now, as they show the fourth, fifth, sixth save in the package, I'm going, getting close to puck drop time here, fellas. Let's watch the live action, shall we? I mean, we saw all these plays earlier. You can show them later after the game or in the intermission or whatever. Anyway, sure enough, they zoom back to live action, and the faceoff's lost, and St. Louis has the puck behind their net. We've missed 3 or 4 seconds, and, a crucial faceoff. You know, when the game's on the line in the third period, I don't want to see any stuff, history of this game from the first period. I want to see the players on the ice. I want them to tell me who are the six, who are the five, what are the coaches doing, who's taking the faceoff, set it all up in advance, and then show the drop of the damn puck instead of going way off topic and then not only not setting the scene, but missing the scene. Get it together. That's just, yeah. Just poor television. I'm sorry.
Yeah, the number one rule for the producer should be, when the game is on, show the damn game. Like, exactly. This is a live event. We want to see every second of the live event. And they were worse for this a few years ago, as I recall. Yeah. It was constant a few years ago.
They missed half the faceoffs at one time. Yeah. They were better at it, but they missed a crucial one tonight. And there's just no excuse for it at that time.
It was like they had a policy where, what doesn't matter? Like, we got to show our... We love our highlight packages so much. We got to show them. But no, fans actually want to see the whole game. Mm-hmm. And that should be rule number one for the producer. Yeah. And it's a huge, I agree. It's a huge mistake on that producer's part for doing that. And it happened a couple times this game, I think maybe 3 or 4. Cause I'm paying attention. Like, mm-hmm. I'm looking at the scoring chances and I want to know, who lost the faceoff? Who made that mistake? And I'm constantly looking for it. And sometimes you have to guess because they're cutting into it. So maybe I have a particular self-interested view in wanting to see all the faceoffs, but I think a lot of fans.
I want to watch the game.
Yeah, I want to watch that. I don't want to see.
Show me the drama, Don't just show me the last play until the next play starts or has already started. Let me see how they're setting up. Like, it's part of the whole scene is who's where, who's on the ice, so on. Give me that information, not something that happened 2 periods ago.
Bruce, my bad thing is the first goal. And God, we have seen this picture. We have seen this too many times in the last month with Darnell Nurse. Mm-hmm. McDavid is also fundamentally, they're both equally, but we haven't seen this as much with McDavid. And so he was a bit foggy. He's still getting over his flu. McDavid also got sucked. He was puck watching and they both got sucked behind the net. But Nurse, he's got a decision to make there. Fundamentally, he's got to stop the play to the slot. Mm-hmm. That guy was heading the other direction. And Nurse has to either get in there fast enough that he can wrap his stick in there and get stick on puck and stop that pass out. Or he's got to go the other direction and play the pass on that side. And he just made the wrong call. He got stuck. He was again behind the net on a slot goal. And this is 2 games in a row, maybe more than that, but two, like he has got to cut this out of his game. He's got to make better reads. He played really well the rest of the game.
Yeah, he got good after. I think he got mad at himself possibly because I thought that's sort of even late in the first period and certainly in second and third, he was really starting to play his game better than I've seen him in quite a while. But that first goal was just terrible. Like, I mean, you learn in peewee hockey, if you chase the guy behind the net on one side, the puck's going to come out the other side. You camp out in front of the net, you can maybe check the guy, you can maybe tip a pass coming from either side of behind the net. You got way more options, way more things you can do. He just took himself right out of the play.
They can't score from the corners, Bruce, and they can't score from behind the net. But
they sure can score when they're left alone in front of the net.
They sure can. And they do.
Even Ivan Barbashev can score from there.
What's your number?
Well, this is a game of real funky numbers. Lots of them. I mentioned the ice time earlier, 28-48 for Draisaitl. I mean, that's just off the charts
That was for Draisaitl. Okay.
Draisaitl, 30 plus for Klefbom again. But what I'm going to go with is the shots for percentage and the leaders on the Oilers. These are the six leaders, the guys over 60%. And they are Zach Cassian, Ryan Spooner, Ty Ratty, Patrick Russell, Milan Lucic, Kyle Brodziak. The bottom six. And they carry the play, at least by the count of the shot clock. They did get burned for one goal there, the Brodziak line. But those two lines did their job in terms of tilting the ice and taking the body in some cases. I mean, Zach Cassian, he had a terrific game. You know, he had the most shots on the Oilers, 5, and a couple of really good ones. And he had the most hits, 5. And he was really engaged and activated in a good way in this game after kind of losing his cool in Dallas the last game.
Yeah, two grade-A scoring chance shots mm-hmm. for Cassian. So one on the penalty kill. I thought, and I do think Louis DeBrusque was saying he shot high, but I do think the goalie got a piece of that shot.
No, the goalie got a piece of that.
And
they, because it went into the netting, and they had the face-off in the St. Louis zone, so that's always a clue.
Well, there you go. There's a good clue.
Anyway, that was those two lines for all that they had. You know, fairly limited ice time, mm-hmm. but about 12 minutes each for the Brodziak line, and then about 7 minutes each for the Spooner line.
What was the highest percentage?
That was 78% for Cassian, 7 shots to 2, and it was 8 shots to 3 for Ratty, 5 to 2 for Russell, 6 to 2 for Spooner.
Oh, not Russell, Patrick. You always Patrick, have to say
Patrick Russell. Russell. Patrick Russell. Yes, sorry. The bottom six, and they were the top six Oilers in this game for any of the shot metrics, Corsi, Fenwick, or shots on goal.
If there's one player who's turned his game around under the new coach, it's Zach Cassian. He looks mm-hmm. like Zach Cassian when he first came here and was trying to earn a job and get his career together again. Mm-hmm. And I heard there had been a bit of a falling out between Cassian and McClellan. Like there was some acrimony there. I can't remember where I heard it. Maybe I'm just making it up. I hope not. But he is a player reborn. We're seeing the old Baba Yaga of the 2017 playoffs, 2016-2017 season. This very fast, aggressive, effective hockey player who can help a team win. And is that ever exciting to see? Because he's got another year on his contract, as you reminded me a few podcasts ago. Well, Lucic was also moving his feet. Yeah, they were all on
I didn't mind the game tonight, other than I didn't like his positioning on the second goal. I think he got caught in the middle of nowhere on that second
I didn't have him there. I'll have to. You'll do the review of my scoring chance work, and maybe you'll add that in there.
He didn't cover the point shot adequately, but that was. That was the one that showed up on the score sheet. But I liked how he was moving his feet, and generally the ice was tilting in the right direction when those guys were out there, which is really. I mean, that's what Hitchcock wants out of them. I mean, one of these times, one of these weeks or months, they're going to get a goal. But
it's a New Year's thing. Overdue. It's their New Year's resolution, Bruce. They want to. So, Bruce, my number was 11, which is the number of saves on grade A chances that Cam Talbot made. And a lot of those were triple A chances. So the St. Louis had 13 to 11 for the Oilers. I don't know what the shots were. I don't pay much attention 30, to that.
36-30 Edmonton were the shots.
So St. Louis had a pretty good game, 13 grade A scoring chances. And, I've heard a few people mention, Bruce, there's been an increase in grade A chances this year. I was listening to the Gregor show. Who's the goalie guy that they have on there? He was saying that their goalie expert.
Kevin is in goal, yeah.
Yeah.
Kevin Woodley.
He was saying that an NHL coach was telling them that they're getting like 5 more grade A chances a game. And I had been noticing the same thing in our counts. And I was thinking, like, what am I doing wrong? Like, How come we're having so many more grade A chances?
Game's opening up a bit.
There's this 13-11 chances that what it was today is fairly not unusual right now. Mm-hmm. And anyway, Cam Talbot outplayed the opposing goalie, and that's why the Oilers won. That's the fundamental story of the game. And how many times have we said that this year? Maybe two or three times. This is the third time, I think. Mm-hmm. And it's so great to see Cam Talbot play like that, because it reminds you of, like, oh yeah, that's the goalie we saw in 2016-17. That's Cam. That's who Cam Talbot can be. That's why we all thought the Oilers, you know, he was going to earn a $5 or $6 million a year contract, because the guy can play net. And what a great thing this would be for the Oilers if they have two guys. You know, when was the last time, Bruce, the Oilers actually had two goalies who could go back and forth? I mean, we can all think of the 80s and Andy Moog and Grant Fuhr, right? Has there been an occasion? I mean, there was Radford and Fuhr.
I would say Rollison and Mathieu Garon.
Yes.
08, 09, and it was 07, 08.
Garon was good that year.
And then in the lockout year, the Ralph Kruger year, mostly Dubnyk, but Habib Boulin and Dubnyk together were excellent.
There you go.
Neither of those teams was good enough to even make the playoffs, but it wasn't because of goaltending that they didn't make it. Let's put it that way.
Well, this will be fantastic if this is – I mean, Cam Talbot has had two good games in a row. He was good. He was at least okay in the L.A. game, I thought. And he was – I mean, he was superb this game.
Yeah, I got one huge break, and I have to go on the record here saying the Oilers got a break from the refs tonight when I thought Matt Benning knocked Vladimir Tarasenko off course and into Talbot. And not only did they wave off the goal, they gave Tarasenko a goaltender interference penalty.
Well, Brucey, Talbot
would have had no chance on that, and we wouldn't have blamed him. But they got let off the hook there with a let's call it a favorable call. One went Oilers' way this time.
Yeah, so the Oilers would have had that.
It happens every 5-10 years, you know. Oilers catch a break, and you have to give credit to the refs when.
Bruce, the Oilers would have had no chance on that, and not just Cam Talbot, but if the play had happened in California.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
Although I think Talbot got elbowed in the head too. So I think Benning might have. Yeah, Benning gave him a push, obviously, but the St. Louis player made the most of it and elbowed the goalie in the head. And I think it was the right call. So there you go.
Okay. Well, sure. I just saw Tarasenko was getting pushed off course and having almost no choice but to collide with Talbot. I think the Oilers were fortunate to get the call the way it turned out. Let's put it that way. So
I think the ref saw the elbow to the head, and that's why he called it. Or maybe it wasn't to the – maybe it was just to the upper body. But it struck me that the elbow got up and clipped the goalie. So, all right. Is that it? We've both done our numbers.
We are.
We are done. I got it.
Numbers here are 3-2, or as I call it, 2-2 with Ersatz's shootout goal, but it shows up as 3-2 on the score sheet I'm looking at.
Works for me, man.
We'll take 3-2 when we've got the three and the other guy's got the two anytime.
Yeah. Looks like Connor McDavid may have figured out the shootout.
Oh, man, was that deadly. I felt so sorry for that goalie, the way he dragged that puck as he came across. And you know that if the goalie had cheated puck side, it was going on his backhand and upstairs faster than he could get across. Like, he really had the guy on a string and buried it, posting in.
That was the captain's final statement of the night. All right. Thanks, Bruce. Thanks for talking.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everyone.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.